In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and my rootin' tootin', western-wearin', cow-wranglin' son of a gun is the one, the only.
Well, hello there, partner. It's me, Travis Ratz here.
I like that you went with like an old prospector cowboy voice.
Did you see my hands? Did you see my hands doing the little jig thing?
Yeah, I like it. Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast, where Travis and I dive deep into graphic novels and trades. It's a comic book club, and you're on it with us. We're talking books. We are in to some westerns, Travis. Are you ready for some cowboy books?
I love cowboys.
I love cowboys. I love books. Put them together.
That's a cowboy book. I always consider myself the cowboy poet laureate of Germany.
Well, I imagine there are a few that are trying to claim that title in Germany.
If they are, they better back off, partner. I'll draw iron on them.
Like, I'm from Arizona. You better watch.
I like the expression drawing iron on someone. I like good old-timey cowboy expressions.
Well, I think there's, and maybe we can get into this a little later, because the book we're talking about is a Western. We've got 3 Western books coming up. We did a palate cleanser, Don't Spit in the Wind, which sounds like a Western, but is not. Although we could talk about, I think if we thought hard about the motifs in Don't Spit in the Wind, we could find a way to make it a Western.
I think it's like a book a professor would write where they're just making the argument that everything's a Western.
Yeah, everything's
a Western, Josh.
Everything's
just
a Western.
Like, well, that book, everything's an argument.
Yeah.
Everything's a Western.
Well, this is an American, you know, America is just one giant Western, isn't it? Can't everything be tied to our kind of fake heritage that we really think that the West was the way it was because of movies and books, and it probably really wasn't that way. But regardless, Travis and I are reading 3 Westerns. We had our palate cleanser, Don't Spit in the Wind. First up in our Western trifecta is The Blood Brother's Mother. Say that 5 times fast.
The Blood Brother's Mother. Blood Brother's Mother. Blood Brother's Mother.
Yeah, you're already,
Blood
you're already bad.
Blood Brother's Mother. Damn it.
Yeah, see? Blood Brother's Mother by Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso on Distillery. Travis, you know me. I'm a sucker for these oversized books. I can't help myself. I just like a French-sized comic. You like a Western. I like a comic book that's a little bigger.
I like a 150 megabyte Western.
Some books are bigger than others, they say, and these Blood Brothers Mother's books are oversized. And I'm a sucker for them.
Josh, can I tell you before we get into the Western? So this was my first experience with Neon Ichiban. This is the a comic reading app, and when you go to Distillery, which this book is from, I didn't buy it hard copy because I wouldn't have time to get here, and I don't know. So I was like, oh, I'll read it digital. Well, normally I'm reading digital through Kindle, and it just through Amazon or whatever it is, it just pops up, makes it easy. This one was interesting. It was an interesting experience. Not a bad experience, Josh. I'm still playing around with it. But have you done any readings on Neon Ichiban?
No, but I'm always curious about third-party comic book readers. Like, Comixology really kind of nailed it, which is essentially what, you know, Amazon just bought that company, right? So, like, It kind of nailed down the reader aspect of being able to zoom in on a panel and slide and go to the next thing. I've read PDFs because I've done like a what was the app that you used to be able to buy a bundle of things and it would help charity? I did like I can't remember what the kind of website that did that, but I bought like a bunch of Image Comics way back in the day when the image boom was going on, and they were all PDFs. And so you had to read them as in a PDF reader on your computer.
Okay. That's not awful.
It wasn't great though, because on a computer, your computer is, you know, landscape and comic books are portrait. And so it was not the best reading experience. So, but let's save that for the end. Cause I want to kind of talk about, we've talked about distillery before, but I want to have a conversation kind of to round this out about your reading experience with this as we get to the end of it. So Travis, this story we've got here, The Blood Brothers' Mother, is the tale of three brothers, three Western brothers, all children during this.
The Blood Brothers, if you will.
The Blood Brothers, until the very end of this book when you finally get to see one of them as an adult. But for all the, for until the last two pages, this is a story of young men in the West trying to find their mother.
Really, I want to go back to that.
Yeah.
To be clear, their last name is Blood.
Blood. Because
they're not their blood father.
Right.
But their father was Reverend Blood or Pastor Blood. Okay. I can't see your face. Yeah. So I didn't
do that. Yes. So their last name is Blood. They are the Blood Brothers. And they are also, I mean, they're brothers by blood. But they're also.
But I would consider you my brother. My brother from another mother, my comic book brother.
Yeah, yeah. So these three brothers, and I don't remember their names, Rabbit and...
Yep, Daniel.
Daniel, and I don't remember the other one's name, Travis Rats.
I think it was Alvin, Simon.
Simon and Theodore. Yeah, Theodore. That's it. Alvin, Simon,
Theodore. I can find the other one while you're coming with your
The story is essentially starts off following their actual father, who has been released from prison and is on a hunt to get his old lady back. He wants to find his wife or his love. I don't know if they were married, but wants to find his woman. And he is the actual father of these three brothers. And he takes their mother and kills their stepfather, the Reverend Blood, which sounds like a DC comic book character. And then he takes off, and the three brothers go on a journey and are slowly separated throughout this journey by different means. They come up against different things.
Banditos.
Yeah, some banditos. They come across a...
rogue, scallywags.
Yes. They come across a Native American woman who is trying to avenge the loss of her entire village.
Oh, it great name too. Something Owl.
Ghost Owl or something like that.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. So we've got this book, a lovely Western motif. I want to talk a little bit, Travis, as you are, you've just said you'd like to consider yourself the cowboy poet of Germany. I think that's how you phrase it.
Just like to consider it. I would assume others would address me by that title as well. Regardless of your question.
Yeah, so talk to me a little bit about what do you want in a Western? What are you looking for in a Western, in a cowboy motif? What are you hunting for? What are you yearning for when you head west?
Good question. What am I yearning for? Because I was thinking about I was going to go with size and scope, but I don't think that's true. I think I like an intimate Western, you know, as well as a big kind of lonesome dove, a sprawling Western, or a Dances with Wolves, Josh. Yeah. So for me, I think it's like, I really like codes of justice coming in conflict with each other. Because especially in a lot of these cowboy stories, you have, you know, really great characters who are capable of like extreme evils, but also like really extreme goods. And they are constantly partnering up or encountering each other. And it's fun seeing one character's code of honor or justice or duty come in contact with another. And you can see how that plays out. I think that happens in this book. I think it happens in a lot of great Westerns on there. And also, that allows for these really great conversations in Westerns about justice, about masculinity, about peace, about family, about love, from great characters talking to great characters. And I like a good shootout. I like a good shootout.
I think it's this, I think when we, and I would agree with you. I mean, I don't, I'm not as well versed in Westerns as the cowboy poet laureate of Germany, but however, you know, I think there's this thing that, that a Western gives you is you think of Europe and England in particular, if we're just going to focus in on, you know, our forebearers of you know, the colonial America, the sort of Anglican sort of myth of knights and armor, they have that. They have King Arthur, they have Camelot, they have, you know, Chaucer and Canterbury Tales and all of these things that are their history that they can hearken back to and give you morality plays and talk about justice and what's right that way. And our version of that in America is the Western, right? Because that is our look back to a time when, you know, cowboy chivalry, if you will.
He rode a blazing saddle, he wore a shiny star, like that kind of.
Yeah, like we have that, but then you also get the sort of like, what is justice? What is morality? And you get to boil it down into these black hat, white hat sort of like conceptions, right? In early Westerns. And then,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you,
yeah.
You get sort Western. Of, you get sort of that gray middle area with, you know, spaghetti Westerns and Europe kind of taking on this Western thing. And then you've got Eastwood kind of doing his, wet like him in those Westerns that are not as black and white. But it's this idea, I think, of the fighting in Westerns, the duel, right, is very knights. And it's not the sort of, I mean, it is destruction and it is death, but it's a different
trial by combat.
Right. This shootout is different than war, right? Like it feels different. And it's not as violent as modern shootout with automatic weapons, right? This is the six shooter. You've got only so many shots. You've got to reload your rifle in the right way. And it's more visceral and more dramatic, I think, because of that. And I think you're able to kind of tell this story with that's mythic. It's an American myth, I think, of what Westerns give us. Right.
Right, and it has like modern technology for the time, which is the great equalizer, like the pistol, the rifle, the saddle, these things that before, like in like knights, it was like, oh, were you born into a knighthood? Do you have? Can you afford the armor? You know, do you have
what's more?
Do you have also, a lord?
What's more American idealism than saying that anyone can go west and become something? Right, like it doesn't.
Yeah.
You're not born into knighthood or whatever it is. You get to take on the mantle of I'm a marshal because I went to that. They said I'm the sheriff because I'm here, right? That sort of thing.
I also just love like some of the themes and motifs that are just have been around from classic Westerns and make their way into the spaghetti and then even the neo Westerns. Like for me, I always love coward is like one of the worst things you could be. In fact, if you kill someone in a coward, like the coward John Ford, you know, or something like that. And I just love that. I love some of the solidified classic codes of honor that like it'd be like being called a poser in the 90s.
I mean, it's that you're right. That's correct. So does this book. As it's our first Western we're reading in this Western triptych that we're going through, this trifecta of Westerns, did it tickle some of those itches for you? Did it hit some of those points that you wanted it to hit, that you need from a Western?
I think not only did it hit it, I think that might be the best thing that I enjoyed the most about this book, is that it felt like distilled Western, like if this was a Western chili, right? it's got a good bean broth base, good chili tomatoes in there, you know, yeah. on there, where you're just like, there is no, it is not trying to be something other than a Western, right?
Right.
And because of that, it just, you get sucked. I think that's honestly why we were able to just jump in on that question and talk about what is a Western, because I think this is a real good, oh, this has got check, you know,
yeah.
Outlaws, missing parents, Native American bounty hunters, codes of conduct in conflict with each other's, hangings, highwaymen, everything. Man.
It does. It has it all, but it's a tight story. Right. So Brian Azzarello writes a very tight sort of story following these three boys. It's less of a road trip than I think if it were a movie or a TV show, it'd be far more road trippy. Right. There'd be more points of interest along the way. But you do kind of in these four books, you get this arc of, OK, let's introduce the father. Let's introduce the birth father. Let's take away the real father and the mother. Let's kick these boys off on a journey. Let's give them someone to trust. Oh, nope. Shouldn't have trusted that guy. Everything was taken from them. Now, they continually are set back and forth and they have to. I thought one of the really interesting beats in this is there's this boy that they meet who's older, who gets them drunk. Right. And mm-hmm. and he's that boy's talking about this gun he has. Right. And one of the blood brothers is like taken by this like six shooter that this boy has. And then they wake up and all of their things have been stolen by this boy that they trusted. Right.
So glad that he just stole their stuff because for a couple panels there. I thought it was gonna go even darker.
Yeah. And so he like he steals because he is like seems very creepy, this young man. Right. Yeah. But he steals their stuff, steals their horses and then takes off with them. And they end up finding him and saying, hey, that guy stole our stuff. And they're like, oh, what did he steal from you? And then the boy's like, he also stole a gun from us. It was my father's. Right. And he gets that six shooter. And it's like this. It was one of those scenes where. Like being a stealing a horse was the worst thing you could do, right? We hang a man who steals a horse, right? And so it's real interesting thing where right in that moment, the boys become men isn't the right word, but in that moment they learn that they cannot trust the way that they think they can trust. And that they may need to lie and they may need to be a little deceptive in order to get ahead, right? Like they have this reverend of a father. So they're trustworthy and they want to believe and they want to give hope to this other person who's coming. But then he takes everything away from them. And then they're like, well, screw it. Hang him. Do it.
Yeah.
Right. Or at least one of them is in that moment. Right. You know, Rabbit.
They get hardened throughout the journey, certainly. What did you think about so obviously the object of their quest is their mother, who is basically kidnapped back into the life. And I put that word kidnapped in quotes, back into the life with her her ex-partner. And we find out that at first, when we first meet the mom, we're like, oh, she's sacrificing herself because, you know, she doesn't want them, you know, her ex-lover to kill her. Her family. But then we find out that the mom has, you know, some complexities of her own. I'll just say it, meaning that as the story goes on, we realize, oh, she is just as much of an outlaw and a ne'er-do-well. And we question, like, did she even really care about the boys at all? What did you think about the mom character? And was that, did the character ever hit for you?
I think there could have been, and we'll talk about this idea of like, and I think this just comes down to this model of releasing 3 to 4 issues and then being done. I don't think we get to spend enough time with that turn for the mom. Mm-hmm. It at first is like, oh man, she's going because she wants to make sure the boys aren't getting pulled into this Western, this bad life. This ex-lover of hers is one bad dude. She doesn't want to pull those boys into it. But then when they then you kind of see that, no, she's kind of the mastermind behind some of this stuff that you know, her outlaw lover is doing. And then it's this piece where is she knows that that life is really who she is, and she doesn't want that for the boys, and she believes that if they stay with Blood and they stay in that town, that they'll have a better life. And she's just not the mom for them. It's a very complicated thing that I don't think we get cleared up in these four issues. If I were to look and go like, that's the one story beat that could have had a little more time, would have been that part with the mom and her decision. I just don't think we got enough of that.
Right, right. It's almost like, you know, there's always in Westerns, like someone running away from the law. She seems at a lot of this point trying to be running away from those kids, the family, not necessarily because, you know, she's scared of them, but like maybe trying to protect them. And the only way she can is run away from them would be the more positive way to look at it, or the, you know, way of just being like, oh, she's just a real shitty parent. And just like super selfish and wants to, you know, doesn't want to be burdened down by these kids.
And we get the moment at the very end where the boys save her with that panel where he shoots off that guy's nose and it's just a nose flying through the air. Mm. But you get her telling those boys, just run, go. You don't ever get her and the boys or her explaining to them, like, this is why I did it. It is just literally go. Like, yeah. I can't, you shouldn't be here. This is dangerous. Go. And in that moment, you can think she knew that her life was dangerous, so she didn't want the boys to be part of that life. She knew that part of me wants to go like, she knew that if she didn't go with the outlaws, things were going to be bad for her and those boys.
Right.
Right. So she leaves. But in the moment of being able to, we don't get a moment of her explaining why she did that to the boys. And I think that that is truly why at the flip end of this book, the only son remaining is an outlaw, right? Like, of course he follows in that footsteps. He wasn't truly given the opportunity to be good, quote unquote, because the outlaws, his mother, his real father, took away the innocence of him, right?
It's in his blood.
It did harken back to the name of these boys, the Blood Brothers. So talk to me a little bit about, how did you think about the separation of these three brothers? Because it is sort of, one brother is narrating the story, while the other two eventually, these three brothers get pulled apart throughout this journey, leaving one of those brothers alone, without his mother, without his father, without his real father, to kind of face the world. And really, this book is following a child this entire time until the very end. We kind of get to see him as an adult. Well, how did you feel the story handled the separation of those boys?
I mean, throughout the story, how they get separated?
Yeah.
Well, I actually really liked, you know, I've seen a lot of Westerns, and the thing about Westerns is, you know, the set pieces kind of repeat themselves. You know, stranger wanders into town, or a guy has to protect the town, or you got to go round up some, you know, there's like a dozen kind of stories you kind of just tell with different shapes and sizes in a Western. I really liked the idea of having not just one young man who's trying to find his mother through this Western landscape. I like the idea of three brothers. It feels, I don't know, in some ways this feels very like Faulkner, like Southern Gothic to me, or Cormac McCarthy, where you have this kind of, where you know, like nothing, this isn't going to end well.
No.
So I do like, the first brother is kind of pulled off in the direction with some gold miners who they pal up with. And one of the brothers ends up staying with them because he's got a crush on one of these Swedish gold miners' daughters. That's a great Someone write a country song about that. She was a Swedish gold miner's daughter.
I like it.
And so that one's kind of nice because you there is a little bit of hope on there. Like we don't our narrator, the son who's narrating, is like, well, you know, I've never that was the last I've seen him. I like to think that he's out in San Francisco. But when he leaves the brother, it was under the auspice that the next day there were two people in that group that were going to murder them.
Yeah.
So that was pretty grim. And that happens about like issue two or maybe issue three. So we had the full set of brothers for a long time. And then I'll tell you, Josh, I got a little teared up with the other
brother. That is rough when what happens to Rabbit.
Like I was really surprised by my feelings. One, because we'll talk about the art on here, and I did have some issues with some of the characters and distinguishing them from each other. Mm-hmm. So when we got to the end and we had this scene, I was sitting there, I was like, wow, this is like hitting me more than I thought it would, because I had some issues with the pacing because everything happened so fast. It was a little bit harder for me to get invested into every character. Yeah. So sometimes when that happens and then you get a big character demise like we did for Rabbit at the end, it won't hit as hard, but this it hit for just being with this character for four issues, just the way the art, and like you don't see the boy shot, you hear a bang and you see him slumped over in his saddle, and then the narrator Daniel is describing like he didn't see anything, he just felt the weight of his brother. I'll paraphrase it, but he goes, and the sound of like when a confession becomes a secret.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
And he like takes off into the dust cloud, right? He's running away. And at that moment, when the bang hits, because the way the panel's laid out, the panel before it is you see the boys riding off, you see the mother, right? And then you get the bang and you're like, oh man, they killed the mom. And then in script, there was then a thud. And you're like, oh shit, they didn't shoot the mom, right? Like it could have been the thud is the mom going down, right? But then you get to that next panel and it was like, he leaned into me, made a sound like the moment a confession becomes a secret. Like you just said, I called to our mother till my tongue was caked in dust, but she rode into the storm far ahead. So the mom doesn't even stay with them.
The titular character, the blood brother's mother,
does not stay with them. And you see him, they're riding, and the panels are these three cinematic long panels that you get when we just break the page up into three panels. And you, in one panel, the brother leans, and the next panel, he's on the ground, he's fallen off the saddle. And in the third panel, the other brother is holding his brother. And it's just this. Then you get him burying his brother. And the last two pages are this giant flash forward. So the last moment you get to spend with this boy in his youth is as he's burying his younger brother. His older brother has left him. His mother has left him. His father who raised him is dead. His older brother goes off for love. His younger brother is murdered. And his mother did not stay with them as they ran.
And he says something like, that's where I put my rabbit in the ground.
Yes. And woof. Mm-hmm. And then the very last line is, I am my father's son.
This day on, I own my father's gun.
That is you are correct. There is no happy ending in this book. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
Do you prefer that in a Western, Josh? Do you like a happy ending Western, or do you like a, like this?
I think it depends on the tone. I think this would have been a weird veer for this to be happy, because it is a pretty oppressive kind of, every moment is kind of stacking on top of each other. Mm-hmm. And then I think in my head, I'm like, well, how do you make it happy? Your mother left you and didn't leave you because she really, like, the reason she left you aren't clean and nice, right? So how do you make a happy ending when we as readers when we as readers are seeing the mom not do the right thing, how do you make it happy?
The only way to do it would be for him to saddle up and work with a half Comanche woman, and that becomes like a surrogate mother figure, parental figure. It's not great, but like maybe they, you know.
Yeah, you know, Matt Owl following
right
Matt Owl.
Right, yeah, Matt Owl. If he rode off with Matt Owl, it's not, I mean, it doesn't negate the losses that he suffered, but at least you're leaving with like
a sense with a family.
Like, it's not work out for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because they both lost their family. If you think about it that way, if you want to bookend it in a different way, Matt Owl lost all of her family. He has lost all of his family. Can they find family together? But there is something brutal about no one has anyone. At the end of
and the Matt Owl thing, speaking of another loss, he narrates, he goes, oh, she wasn't there. I found out later that someone collected a big bounty purse on her. And he goes, I would be lying if I, you know, over whiskey as an adult, didn't think about how I was sitting across the campfire from that kind of money when I was a kid. And he goes,
right?
I don't know. He goes, you could think what you want. I know what it means. And I'm like, dang.
Yes. Like there's nothing. It is a brutalist Western. So let's talk a little bit about the art as we kind of wrap up this discussion. Then I want to talk about your reading experience with it. So the art, you had mentioned early on that you felt a way about it without being real straightforward with it. I would tell you, like, this is Eduardo Risso doesn't normally look like this. This is a very different version of Eduardo Risso. Talk to me about your feelings about this art. What did you think about it? What hit you?
Well, I mean, the medium itself is very beautiful. These, you know, pencils and watercolors that just kind of bleed into each other in a lot of these panels, or the watercolors just, you know, kind of washing into those sunsets and the blues for the night scenes. So it's very beautiful to look at. But one of the things with that art style is it can be, at least it was harder for me, especially when it came to like the bandits and the cowboys, to really recognize who each person was. One of the things I did with this one is we'll talk about it later, but I started reading in panel mode just to force myself to kind of look more at the panel and stop trying to absorb everything so quickly, like the way I can with, you know, digital created art or just traditional black inks and colors, whether digital or not. And so to just really kind of take in the panels as these kind of paintings, which they're presented to us as, and less of like narrative comic book art. Yeah. And when I did that, that made the book much more enjoyable for me, because at first, I was digging the writing so much, I felt the art was slowing me down or confusing me instead of heightening my experience. And then I said, stop trying to leverage the writing against the art or the art against the writing. Enjoy the writing, but then take the time to appreciate the paintings that are collected in these panels. And that really helped for me, but it didn't, I mean, but I still was a little bit confused about some of the characters.
I would agree with you. I think when you get to the
outlaw gang,
you have very little things to kind of differentiate them, right? Like the dad, their blood dad, their actual father, has the big scar on his face, but he looks awfully similar to the guy who bites off Rabbit's ear. But that guy has a full beard. Right. So it's this sort of like, how do you tell? They're both blonde. They're both wearing Western gear. Which is which? Right.
Right.
And so that's the part that becomes a little tough to tell who's who in these moments. But then you get the three brothers are very similar looking. And the way to distinguish them is haircut. Right. Like the oldest brother has longer hair, and then Rabbit's ear is bit off. So that's how you're supposed to. But I would agree with you. The art in this, any one of these pages is kind of a gorgeous composition. Right. Mm-hmm. The coloring is great. The kind of like visceral destruction is great. Like the even though it's cartoony, there are scenes in here that are brutal, where someone is dead or covered in blood or someone's been shot. There's a scene where like early on when you're like, oh, maybe their dad isn't that bad. Because he finds out that the gang that got it, that kind of picked him up, has kind of raped and murdered this group of settlers, right? These people traveling west. And the scenes of what they did to that woman are very graphic, right?
And now what you expect to see in a watercolor medium, like, is not usually something known for violence. So the fact that you can, with this softer medium, present this like hard graphic violence in a way that is very visceral is
but like oddly interesting, oddly kind of artistic in a way that's just weird. But he sees this, he comes out and he like takes a slug and then shoots everybody up who had a hand in this. And you're like, oh, okay, maybe that guy's not that bad. But I just thought it was really like the artwork throughout, the coloring is just fantastic, man. We talk about loving a barbecue sauce. This is Arizona sunset is what this is, man.
That Western palette.
That Western palette, the purple, orange, yellow, red of it all. It's a Suns jersey, right? it's a Phoenix Suns jersey the whole time in this book. And I found the art, again, like you, sometimes challenging to see who is who. But when you slow down and you look at the kind of painting of each panel, gorgeous. Yeah. Just I have it physically, right? I bought the four oversized issues as they were coming out. I was kind of snagging each kind of first issue of these distillery books, being like, okay, is this for me? Do I want to check this out? And then a couple of them, I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to read that whole thing. Right. Not all of them. A couple of them, some of them I didn't really get into. I didn't like a whole lot. But I grabbed this one and was like, yes, this is a good one. So talk to me about your reading experience on this app, Travis. What was
that? So on Neon Ichiban, which is
a
super dope name also, by the way, hard name to remember. If you don't know, you're like, wait, what was the website I bought those comics on? Neon Ichiban. Okay. So obviously I haven't played around with it all that much. So I don't know. I'm reading it off the browser, which had a little bit of a clunkier experience. I don't know if it has its own app, but here's what I want to talk about. When you buy on Neon Ichiban, you can go to the book. Like I went to Blood Brothers Mother and they were all there for $5 for a digital copy.
Yeah.
And so I was clicking on first one, I bought $5. Then when I go back there, I'd go back to buy the second one. You know, it's like, oh, $5 for the digital copy. But if you go down, you see a bunch of users.
Yes.
And then they have prices for their digital copy. Some of them are more than the actual $5 because they do varying digital covers as well. They'll be like $8, but most of them are a little bit less than $5. So I only paid $5 for one of the four issues. I paid two for another, four for another one, and I think maybe four for two. So I was getting $1 to, you know, $2 off a $5 comic book by just clicking, hey, I'm gonna buy it from this guy. And then like in 2 minutes, it would be in my library.
So is this idea that they have decided that their digital releases are limited? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is kind of an outcropping of wanting it to be like creating this idea of a digital physical medium, right?
Non-fungible tokens.
Yes. Or is it this weird NFT version of it? Because none of them are like giantly priced for the digital versions, unless it's like a rare, which is weird that there's like a rare cover. So it's this part of it where I'm like, ooh, the NFT of it all. But then there's a part of me that goes like, well, I'm actually owning something. I actually own something, as opposed to what happens on Kindle goes down. I don't have any of that stuff ever again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is a file that I can download and keep and I can resell. That's an interesting piece to me. That piece of it.
And I was looking at it. I don't know how this works on there, but even what you can do is, I guess they're doing this now at cons, is they come with QR codes that you can get like a writer or a artist to sign. And then it opens it up where they can sign on your digital book or they can draw on it. So they can doodle on it. And then you could theoretically sell your digital copy for more. If it was like, Riso did like a signed it or drew on it. Now that doesn't interest me at all. There are different strokes for different folks, you know?
Yeah. It's an interesting idea of how to do that digital newsstand of it, to be able to buy it in that version of it. I think it limits the reach, right? I think it makes it more difficult. It probably makes them more independent. They're not tied to having to deal with Amazon. You know, maybe there's a sort of political take on that version of not wanting it to be in those versions. They no longer use Diamond as their release. It's through Penguin Random House. So they're with their distribution is now through a real book company and not a comic distributor like Diamond. So that's an interesting piece. So I do believe like that is causing some delays in the large version of this, the single book version of this, because this has been out for a little while. There is a book that is by Francesco Francavilla is doing art, and I believe it's, I got it right here. It's called White Boat. I'm going to grab it so I can go. Oh, that's who wrote it. So it's Scott Snyder and Francavilla, right? It looks a lot like Afterlife with Archie, right? Because Francavilla's got that great sort of stuff. It's an interesting thing. There have been two books out, and book three has been delayed for like ever. There is no like book three has yet to come out. And I think it had something to do with the switch over to publishers. I'm not exactly sure, but book three has still not come out. And this was like 2024 is when the first issues came out. I think that's part of the struggle with this. I think there was a delay in the release of the third or the fourth issue of Blood Brothers Mother. There's been a couple different kind of pieces like that. And I think that's probably just par for the course for a new comic publisher, right? As it's going through growing pains and trying to do something different instead of just going, no, we're going to release graphic novels and we're just going to release them, you know, the way like First Second does, or the way that, you know, other publishers who like, that's just what they do, you know? Like, if you're just going to release, I always think it's interesting that we're dealing with this, the people trying to do something different with the media, whether that was TKO, which we just read two TKO books last month, or this distillery kind of trying to do their own different version of publishing, where I just go like, I think playing the single issue game for companies like this is a weird thing. Just like, but I guess like that's how you get people to taste it, right?
Yeah, for the distillery stuff especially, I've noticed, because the distillery books have had some not pacing issues, because they're not issues if that's the way they tell their stories. But for me, it's a learning curve getting into it. It was with Partisan as well. I felt that was like kind of an odd pacing to it. This one as well, where it just feels like, oh, let me kind of see some different corners and be around some characters more, but they're really kind of locked into this four issue model.
Well, that's what's really interesting. This one is all the other books I've read from Distillery are three, and this one was four, and I was like, oh, that's weird, because I got the third issue.
Oh, were they three?
Yeah.
I thought Partisan,
yeah.
Okay, maybe you're right. Okay,
so Partisan was TKO. So Partisan was a TKO book.
Oh, okay. I'm conflating the two. Yeah, sorry.
Somna was the one that we read that was Distillery. So the kind of like old witchy, the other witch book we read, right?
That was an Eisner.
Yeah, that was three issues. So every other book they've been putting out has been three issues. And so I was like, all right, I got the third issue of Blood Brothers Mother. I looked through it and I was like, oh, no, it's not done. Okay. And then there was a big wait for that fourth issue. So I'm curious like how these companies that are trying to like change the publishing game, it doesn't seem to be going super well. And I just think like there is a model, and I hate to, I mean, like we've talked about it before, like the manga model is is the model, right?
The like, Brubaker model.
Right. That, well, that's a model too. But you think of like, so Image and DC have started releasing a bunch of their books in that manga size. Some of the top selling books in comics right now, in graphic novels, are these manga sized reprints of DC books. Hush, The Dark Knight, this Wonder Woman book. All of those have been like top selling books because it's a new format that if you're a reader who's kind of like, yeah, I don't, that's the size I love, you know, like that's a, it's in, the story's in one book. It's not oversized. It's $10 as opposed to like, oh, I'm going to buy this and it's $35 to get the hardcover, right? These single issues to buy them now are $15 a piece. So you're spending $60 to read this story if you're not doing it digital, or you didn't buy the versions that, like, when they first came out, and still I spent $8.99 on each of these issues, right? They're great. The quality's good. It's a glossy cover. It's a, the pages are great, but it's like, man, I don't know that it's cost prohibitive probably for people to jump into something like that. Especially when it's not scheduled out.
Yeah, right. If you don't know if you're going to get it, if it's not going to get completed, you know, you're waiting for a third book for years. I don't know. I'm gonna sell these. I'm gonna put them on there. I'm gonna put them up for two, make a half buy. And if people buy them, because there's not a whole lot of options on there, not a lot of people are putting it on the marketplace. I could possibly walk away reading this book for $8 for all four issues.
Yeah.
Now I won't be able to go back and read them, but I don't plan to. And it would be something like, oh, if I wanted this, I would look for it at a Comic-Con where some vendor didn't want to repack it up and was going to give me, I'll give you all four for $15.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
It's an interesting publishing format. I'll give it that. So we have two more Westerns coming up, Travis Ratz, on this Western trifecta that we've got going on. So the next two books, we've got Dead Acre, which is a Black Hand book. It was a novel about a supernatural Western, if you will. Buffy the Western Slayer is kind of what we're gonna read. But it's a guy and not Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And then we're going to read the Enfield Gang Massacre. So two more Westerns around us out. And then I think we get to have a good conversation with that last book of like, what Western pieces are we missing, or which book gave us the kind of Western flavor that we were really looking for? Which gave us the Lay's barbecued potato chips and baked beans
that we really did mine on baked beans. I was going to say,
All right, guys, folks, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us. You can find all of our episodes over at comicexposure.com. If you have anything you want to say to us, we are on Instagram at Comic Exposure. You can also comment on the Instagram or Instagram post. You can send us a message. You can comment on Spotify or whatever your podcast app is, but Spotify is probably the one that we'll see. You can leave us some comments there and we'll check them out. We've been posting all sorts of stuff on the Instagram. So follow along if you want to know what books are coming up for our book of the month. What are we doing this month? What are our reads? Those are up. You can check those out. And Travis, anything else before we go?
No, thanks for coming, y'all. We'll see you, Josh.
Next trade.